Welcome, everybody. We have Rad from Intro, very exciting guest. I'd love to kind of get Rad, your kind of what Intro does and kind of your background and
intro to Intro.
Yeah.
And Rad.
Yeah.
An intro to Intro. I like it. So what Intro is in my background? Okay, good two questions. Pretty simply, Intro makes it very easy to book the world's most in-demand experts and then get advice over a live video call. So for example, in our business category, you could book the founders of Zillow or Reddit or OfferUp, Nextdoor, Drybar, all of these incredible CEOs.
Winnie,
Sarah included. And you could jump on a video call with them, ask them questions about your business, ask them what they did with their businesses, and then get personalized advice tailored to you. And if, you know, you all know this, when you can get insights from someone who's done it well, done it before you and done it exceptionally well,
right,
it could be a huge catalyst for your business and a huge shortcut as well from point A to B. So then my background, I'll start off with like Persian kid, grew up in California, in Southern California. I was really lucky to be able to go study, in mechanical engineering and nanotechnology at UCSB. My parents, my family comes from a world of engineers and then post-college, I decided I didn't want to be an engineer. I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And ultimately I went down the entrepreneurial route. And my last company before Intro, we built an operating system for SMBs. And then that company, long story short, ended up getting acquired by Intuit. It became, you know, foundational to the new QuickBooks Online. And then we relaunched the new QuickBooks Online while we were there. That's one of the most successful small business softwares in the world. So really lucky. Like, I kind of pitch myself sometimes that I got to do that. It's kind of crazy if you think about it.
It is.
But it was very, very, very cool. And I love that I got to be a part of so many different businesses' lives as a result. So
also, just a note to everybody listening, this podcast is sponsored by me and Sarah's Intro pages. Yes. So
not Intro the company, just our Intro pages. We want you to book us.
intro.co/KevinGibbon if you want any fundraising or logistics tech advice. Sarah, plug yours.
I just lowered my prices. I'm curious if that was a good strategy, but I just slashed them. I went down to like the minimum. Because I want some bookings and I want to be able to send, like, I always feel a little sheepish sending people my intro page who ask me for, you know, to get on a call with them. But I feel like now that it's a much lower price, like I should just send it.
Yeah. It's, you know, the best thing about Intro is, and we all know this, there's two sides to this coin. There's the consumers and then there are the supply side, the experts. And I'll start off with the supply side. You know, as you grow your audience a little bit and as you grow your credibility within, let's say, the entrepreneurial world, you start getting inundated with a lot of requests, a lot of DMs, emails. I mean, in some cases, people are finding folks' phone numbers and calling them, which is a little bit too much, or quite a bit too much. And as a result, like, to be able to sift through all of these requests and then pick and choose which one's worth the time and which one's not, because a lot of times you'll say yes to someone and they show up, and because it's kind of casual, they show up and they're not prepared, they don't have great questions, and it just creates a bad experience. By adding just a little bit of a monetary layer, so some sort of price point, it filters out a lot of people who are just not serious, but it allows for the folks who are serious and who believe they'll get an ROI on the information and on the cost of that session because of the information they'll learn. It allows them to now come into the situation where they get access to you guys or any of the other experts. It allows them to come in with questions prepared because now they know that they paid for it and it's, you know, time equals money to them as well. But
right.
The best part is for you guys get to have an incredible experience where someone comes prepared, they're very serious, and the best part about it is like they're just so grateful. Like that's the coolest part is they're so grateful, and you can tell right. in real time because you could see their face that you're actually making a difference and you're helping them. And it's just been, it's been really cool to see. So yes, please go book Kevin and Sarah. they are incredible experts. I mean, Sarah, you built an incredible marketplace as well, and that's not an easy thing to do. And I'm in awe of you and what you've done. And same with you, Kevin. You built, you know, two really incredible companies, and it sounds like Airhouse is just doing absolutely, it's doing exceptionally well. So,
yes, thank you. I'm really curious. There's been and just for people listening, like kind of like the why now kind of thing for intro. Like I think there's been a few different takes on intro. Right? There's been what is it? Clarity.fm, which was founded by Dan Martell. There's Cameo, which is obviously completely different, but it's similar as far as like pairing. Well, it's kind of like a funny video type of thing. Like what kind of led you to like build intro?
Two parts. So I've actually had the idea for intro for a long time, but
yeah.
I talked to Bill Gross a long time ago, and one of the things he had shared with me, and then he did a big presentation on it, which was one of the biggest indicators of success for a startup is actually timing, not just team, totally. Not just idea. Yep. And so I had this idea for intro for a very long time. And part of that was because of this moment in time that I had that completely changed my life. So, and maybe I'll just touch on that really quickly. You know, yep. When I was 18, I was walking down the street at UC Santa Barbara with a friend of mine, and she learned that I was like into this idea of entrepreneurship. And funny enough, I didn't even know the word. I didn't even know what the word entrepreneur was. She was the one that taught me based on the actions that I was taking. And, you know, a month later after that conversation I had with her, we were walking down the street and she had just read about this gentleman who was the founder of Kinko's, who lived in our local town. And he just so happened to be standing right there, you know, across the street from us with about like 30 people. And she said, "Hey, that guy, I just read about him. He's the founder of Kinko's." And I said to myself, "Really? That's the Kinko's guy?" And she's like, "Yeah." And this very shy, very introverted kid back then, I don't know what got into me, but I decided to go up to him. I said, "Hi, Mr. Orfila. I just found out you're the founder of Kinko's. I'm a young aspiring entrepreneur. And I was wondering if I could ask you a few questions." And he said yes to that. And we ended up talking. And in the first 15, 30 minutes, I learned more about entrepreneurship than I had ever learned before. I was so inspired by his story and how he got started. And he said a couple things to me at the end where it made me, it's all I needed. I just needed someone to believe in me like him who had done it before to basically take the plunge and really start seeking out how to become an entrepreneur and be successful at it. And so that moment was so serendipitous and it was so special.
Right.
And you know, when I sold the last business to Intuit, he was the first phone call I actually made. We stayed in touch and I just let him know what was going on and I thanked him. And I had this weird feeling, like this weird thought to myself, which was, man, what if I had never met this guy? Like, where would my life have gone?
Yeah.
And I practice a lot of gratitude and I'm not like one of those entrepreneurs who believe this is just all skill. I believe there's a ton of luck. There is a lot of randomness in this world. Sure. And I thought, you know, what if someone else could have done this? Or what if somebody else didn't get to do this because they didn't get to meet that person that caused a ripple effect in their life and took them down a totally different, you know, path that they should have gone down. And so I always thought like it would be cool to be able to connect incredible, successful founders and entrepreneurs and experts of all sorts with anyone. And that kind of access should be readily available, but it wasn't. It was extremely difficult to come by. So that was...
See that like use case in the product at all of, you know, kind of finding a mentor or like repeat bookings? I don't know how you'd measure it in yeah. your product.
Yeah, we started off with these like 50, we didn't even have like 30 or 45 or 60 minute options for video calls. So we started off with 15 minute video calls, and the behavior that we saw was folks would come and book. About 50 to 60% of the folks would come back and rebook. And wow. a number of them as well would go and book other experts as well. And it was random. A lot of times if you book in the business category, you book other business experts, but if you book in the other categories, there's a decent amount of cross-pollination. And so we started thinking to ourselves, because of this natural behavior, let's start building and testing out some features where it's enabling an ongoing relationship. And with our business category experts, it's very much that you can book them. We're now testing the subscription feature, which is doing quite well. And ultimately you can subscribe to them and have them become an advisor mentor. You get chat access with them. You get a number of video calls per month. And then any additional perks that an expert wants to offer, like a group Zoom or some in-person events, et cetera. And, yeah, it's been really special to see. And I personally have 8 subscribers, so 8 mentees, and and so far, eight of eight have kept on subscribing to me. So it's been fun to work with them and see their progress and it just feels good. Like I feel bonded to them now, and I want to help them, and I'm starting to get to the point where I'm connecting them to folks and helping them even more. So
I'm curious because all three of us here are all marketplace founders. How did you get the marketplace started from both the demand and supply side?
A lot of begging. So I mean, going back to your question of like the why now part, there was a special moment in time that had occurred, which was also a horrific time that had occurred in our generation, which was the pandemic. So because the pandemic had happened, one, this became way more comfortable. This idea of video calls, accelerated the whole thing by 10 years. And I mean, 2 weeks before the pandemic, this was weird. This was uncomfortable, but now it's the total norm. So that was one big reason. Number two, because the pandemic was going on, people were just a little bored and they had more time. So I ended up calling a few friends because I live in LA and I'm part of the tech world, but I'm also part of this world. I called some friends that I made over the years, like Rachel Zell, who is like the world's most yep. famous stylist. And I asked her if other stylists would do this and to my surprise, she said, I'll do this. This sounds fun. And I said, really? You would do this? And she's like, yeah, part of my success has been because I'm always willing to be more accessible than everyone else. And so that was interesting to me. And so we started testing it with her, and we didn't have a marketplace. We started off with a single player tool, and she would just promote it to her audience and say, hey, I'm doing this, connect with me. We can talk about styling you. We can talk about business. She's an incredibly successful entrepreneur. And it just got started from there. And then we added another expert. So during our beta, we had 20 experts with no marketplace concepts, just this them sharing it to their own audience. And that's kind of how we got the flywheel going. And then we introduced the marketplace and then did our own marketing kind of efforts to start increasing demand, and then slowly but surely word got out that this is a thing and it's fun, most importantly, and it's cool. It feels good to be compensated for your time, even though most of these folks don't even need it.
That's another question I have as well.
Go for it.
The piece I've always tried, and this is why we do this podcast for free. We don't make any money off of this. We try to just share our knowledge. I've also been blessed with having, like, early on, in my previous company, having like the Brian Chesky's or the Aaron Levy's just like giving up their time for free. But then what you guys have added is, an actual like monetary like incentive, which like for a lot of most of the people on your site, like they don't need the extra money, right? So I'm really curious about that aspect of it. I totally understand the mentorship piece and I get it and I do it for free, and we do this podcast for free, but like the monetary aspect for these people that like you can't even put I'm curious who charges the most on your platform, actually. Can you say that?
It's probably the ceiling, right? No.
No, there's no, anyone could set their own. We don't wow. really have a say in what they do. We made some suggestions, but for the most part, it's all them.
Lex is so opinion, but I'm sure it's a filter for him. Like if he didn't charge, I'm sure he does 100% to charity. So it's like, it just needs to be that filter. He would have no time left because everyone would be booking him.
But also, yeah, there's the charity feature, but also there is the, like, I'm assuming the majority of people that, like, I don't know what you, Sarah, what you would book your time or what you would book your time at, like, the monetary piece is, like, it's kind of perplexing, but it's obviously working for you. I'm just kind of curious on that piece, like why do people actually put up their time for dollars and they don't really need it? And like I'm running a company and I just sign up for intro and like I'm like, yeah, like here's an extra whatever $300 for 15 minutes for my time or something like that, but like I it's probably better spent like working on my company. So I don't know if it is like what Sarah, what you brought up as a filter, but I'm really curious about that like aspect of that, just in like human nature, I guess.
Totally. Okay. So I think the best thing we have to do is like also take a step back. So we're all a part of Silicon Valley. We've all been fairly successful and we've also built over many years, a strong network within Silicon Valley. And part of the reason is because we are venture backed, you know, we have these incredible investors and like you mentioned, the Bryans of the world and the Aarons of the world, you know, these are folks who probably invested in your company and so forth. So they had an incentive as well to help you out. And this whole culture,
they actually
like,
didn't, to be clear, they did not. Oh, okay. Invest.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. But you were still like a, yes. Pretty well known venture yes, back. Yeah, like yeah, you were a yeah, extremely yeah. hot company of your yeah, time. So,
yes, yeah.
so people want gravitate towards that and they want to be around that. And
that's true.
And so, you know, within Silicon Valley, and let's go back to just like a little bit of history, like 20 years ago, you know, or 30 years ago, we heard of these situations where Steve Jobs would email the CEO of HP and get a response back. And the reason why was Silicon Valley was substantially smaller back then.
Right.
I mean, it was just significantly, it was like 1/100th of the size. And so now it's just much bigger. It is a machine now. And it is not just in Silicon Valley. This idea of Silicon Valley is there, but it is becoming more and more global. So there are folks who live in Silicon Valley that because they just live there, they're interacting with folks, their network starts to become other founders. And as a result, you can get connected to certain folks in a much easier fashion. But for the rest of the folks who, let's say they live in Collinville, Illinois, which is a great town, but it's kind of it's like a farm town, or you live in, you know, Southeast Asia, or you live in South America or wherever it may be. And although you have incredible people around you, you may not have access to some world-class CEOs and founders. And so for them, it's extremely difficult to get access to folks. and they do email, they do DM, and they most oftentimes do not get a response. So part of the reason why is there's all sorts of different reasons for that. There's some sort, sometimes there's just biases or whatever it may be. As a Persian kid, I can straight up tell you guys, I've A/B tested my name to get responses. Like, do I put R Milbram? Do I put Rad Milbram? Do I put my full Persian name? I can tell you it makes a difference, unfortunately, but that's the sad truth. And then number two, you know, some folks are just scared to do that. And we've learned, you know, we always think of this like CEO type as this super outgoing and well-spoken person, but we've quickly learned in our world in Silicon Valley that sometimes the most introverted, quiet, shy folks are actually the best CEOs. So we've learned that that's a myth as well, but that does deter them from reaching out to certain folks as a result. And then for the most part, you know, there's a lot of businesses out there who are self-funded, who are doing five to hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue and extremely profitable, who are unbelievable entrepreneurs, but they don't have the playbooks that we do. And they also don't have the access that we do. So if someone who reaches out to you and says, hey, I have this incredible dry cleaning business, we have, you know, 25 locations, I'd love to get your advice. You might connect with them, but you're like, I don't know how I can help you. Or I'd rather connect with someone who's doing something closer to what I'm doing, which is in the tech world, which creates a little bit of, you know, bias in itself as well. And then through Intro, it eliminates all those things and makes it extremely accessible. And you end up talking to that person who owns those dry cleaners, and you're like, wow, this is an incredible entrepreneur. Like, I should have totally talked to this person. And this is not only benefiting them, but it's also benefiting me. Now, for the price part, it really is a filter. Because like I mentioned, it was 100x smaller. The amount of DMs, the amount of emails folks are getting, it is just a myth that people are responding to those. They might do it once or twice here and there, but for the most part, a lot of folks are not getting responses. And so there needs to be a new way. Like, we just have to be honest about this. There needs to be a new way so that if you aren't an insider in Silicon Valley or if you don't live there, there's a way to get access that's democratized and accessible for all. So by having this monetary layer, it's just a simple way of filtering who's the most serious and who's not. The other thing that I get is interesting is like, well, people can't afford some of these prices and so forth. And in all seriousness, if they're starting a business, people pay lawyers, people pay all sorts of people to start their business. And there's this idea that if you're just starting out or you're not in Silicon Valley, you can't afford things. And that's ridiculous in my opinion.
Maybe you could have like a integration with Carta or something where people could offer some equity in exchange, especially if you're a regular advisor thing. Because I mean, like our lawyers, for example, they didn't take any fees until we had raised our funding.
I got to talk to your lawyers because my lawyers
Gunderson, they're awesome. They're expensive.
Yeah,
but they're awesome.
Our lawyers didn't either. Yeah, until
and then also, we had PR firms in the beginning that wanted equity, and I was like, no, actually, like we just want to pay you because our equity is very valuable to us. But there's early stage PR firms that will just take equity because they know you don't have the cash. So I feel like there's an equity feature there. You could maybe be willing to take some equity and maybe it'll be worth something more than the cash.
Do you want to know something funny? Well, so we started asking our experts about this and I am shocked that the number of them who have told me they're like, I'm way more helpful to my Intro customers than my companies where I'm an advisor, investors in. And it's because there's that immediate gratification of someone paying for this time. So I better give it my all. But it's not a bad idea.
Yeah,
I actually,
that's a great thing.
Also want, now that we're spewing out feature requests, I get so many requests from my investors. We have accumulated a lot of investors over the years. Like,
you should send your link to your investors. That would be amazing.
Well, it's not, no, they want me to meet with maybe companies they're considering investing in, companies they're trying to do a favor for. Like, I don't know. I just get so many, like, could you just, do you just have a quick hour? I'm like, an hour is quick for me. Like, I will do like one per investor per year. It has like been my threshold of these like favors. Not reference checks. I'll do as many reference checks as you want, but like these like favor meetings, like sit through a sales pitch. I'm doing one later today. That's like just me sitting through a sales pitch. And I'm like, do you realize how this is making your investment in Winnie less valuable? Like, this is my time here. So yeah, I'm like, I've kept it to be like, hey, I'm happy to do more of these, but you have to
pay me for it.
a lot of our experts do that. And by the way, I do want to make a distinction. I think both should coexist. Like, we should still pay for, if someone reaches out to us and there's a story to it and we're inclined to connect with them, I still do that all the time. But for folks who don't want to jump through the hoops and they want the instant access, intro is a great alternative as well. But you're right. It's, I mean, a lot of experts, I mean, Nikita is very good at this. He anytime someone DMs him now, he just sends his link and says, look, I get too many, and he gets an insane amount of requests.
Explain who Nikita is to everybody who doesn't know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Nikita Beer is
he's famous.
He is becoming more famous. Yeah, he is an exceptional entrepreneur, first and foremost. He is probably one of the best growth minds right now, especially when it comes to app and getting an app to go viral. He built two companies. One was called TBH and one was called Gas. It was an app for teenagers. And they both went exceptionally viral. And one of them sold to Facebook for a rumored, I think, $100 million. And then the other one sold to Discord, that like an exceptionally popular social network, for an undisclosed amount. But we can probably guess like how much that was, significant dollars. And so, he's done it twice now. And then he's on Intro. He has his link in his Twitter bio and LinkedIn bio. And so, and then he'll post about it as well. And anytime someone DMs him, he'll send them messages saying, hey, I'm happy to connect, but through Intro, we don't really know each other. And so I want to be able to do this through that way. And he gets a decent number of customers. And he's been actually one of our early beta testers for this subscription or plans feature. We don't know what we're going to call it yet, but, four of his subscribe, I mean, this is crazy because we all know how hard this is and how almost impossible it is unless you're one of the very large, well-funded companies. You know, four of his subscribers through Intro have now hit the top 10 in the Apple App Store because of the feedback and advice.
I'm subscribing to him. I'm doing this.
That's crazy.
I've booked him plenty of times, paid for it, and the advice that I've gotten, the best way to think about this is, if you're a business and you're booking a business expert, if you spent $500, or let's just make it simple, if you spent $1,000, the ROI question we ask folks is, if you spend $1,000, will that information help you generate 10x or more in revenue? So will it help you generate $10,000 or more in revenue, or in company value? And let's call it like 20x in company value. And the answer is always, for the most part, I shouldn't say always, but for the most part, it is a very clear yes, and the ROI is substantially higher. The advice that I've gotten from booking Nikita and also Nick Huzar, who's the founder and was the CEO of OfferUp, one of the most successful marketplaces.
Yeah.
I mean, that information, it may sound outrageous to folks, but for a company our size and where we're going to scale to, is going to save us months of headaches and also generate substantial value, where the ROI on that, it's just going to be outrageous when I say the number. It'll be like 1,000x plus. It's going to be incredible because of what we learn and the shortcuts we now have to get from point A to B faster. So
wait, is this podcast a competitor to Intro, as we offer all of this for free?
Definitely not.
I'm just joking.
No,
I'm just joking.
I think the thing you have to think about is we can all watch podcasts, and I watch podcasts all day long, but that advice, that information is a little bit more general.
Yeah, whereas, I totally agree. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was joking.
One thing we found, like, we were testing this like concierge thing with Winnie, where like we would actually talk to you and then make childcare recommendations using our data, but like after and through a conversation. And people just really wanted to, even if they could have like got the exact same search results, like just using our free product, people really wanted to like share their unique twist on, I really want Spanish immersion because my husband speaks Spanish. Like, people want to share about themselves and they want to connect and they want to feel like the advice is really personalized.
Yeah.
We like just found that like most of the like uniqueness was in like people just wanting to talk about themselves and feeling like they were a unique snowflake that couldn't possibly be that our product that we already built applied to them. But I feel like the same thing for, you know, I can listen to a million podcasts, but like I want to share our unique, challenges with Nikita and then get his like unique take, which is probably the same take he gives like everyone else, but it feels special. You're willing to like listen to it more when you feel like the advice is personalized.
Yeah, I can unequivocally say it's substantially better when it is personalized, because there's just little details. It's like the last 10 minutes that makes a winner versus not a winner. And so, you know, and to what you said, which is you're giving a different flavor of Winnie to folks. You know, when I was at Intuit, I got so lucky because I got to hang out with Scott Cook, the founder of Intuit, a lot. And we were in a working session with my team, or a number of folks on my team. And we were talking about this invoicing feature and how to basically incorporate some network effects and virality as well. Yeah. And so ultimately, you know, we were going through this feature, and some people want to have the option to call and pay for an invoice. Some people want to have the option to basically send a manual check. Some people want to be able to just, you know, click on an invoice and pay for it. And so the team was debating, do we just allow them to do the click and pay through a web portal? And Scott had taught the team, and I was just in agreement with him, which is we have to let our customers do whatever they want. And ultimately, if the flavor is they want to call in and pay for this, let's enable that. Let's make that happen. And so that's just, I think, great product development and really listening to the customers.
Is Scott Cook on Intro? You got to get him on. The guy, like, so I'm in this like peer group that he meets with us once a month, and we will literally sit there like trying to help each other, debating something. And then he'll come in for the last 5 minutes and he's like, here's the answer. We're like, bro, like, you just shortcutted like everything. Like, you just saved it. Like, the guy has the best advice and just like so on the nose with every piece of advice he's ever given me. So you got to get him on if he's not on. He would be a whale for you guys.
It was very clear to me why he was the person who made Intuit successful. I mean, he is that good. And I'll work on
like
getting
any
Scott.
Situation you've run into, like he's done it. He knows exactly the answer. And it's like, oh yeah, like of course this was the answer. He's amazing.
Just to switch things up a little bit. So you guys at Intro have raised from really amazing investors, and just like more general advice for our listeners. For one, how did you do it? Obviously, like selling your company to Intuit probably helped, but I know your backers, A16Z, 776. Alexis Ohanian like promotes you like shit. Like, that's all his Twitter feed is.
He loves Intro.
Every other tweet.
He really loves us. It's incredible.
Yeah, he does. How for people that are just getting like started, like how did that happen?
Yeah. So I'll share my experience, and then I'll kind of also talk about it and how you as a newcomer can do it as well. So,
yeah.
So, and you did say exactly that, which is I have sold a company before and I was part of a pretty well-known product. And there, I've also built, you know, quite a few relationships, you know, not just in the past couple of years, but over 10, 12, 15 years or so now. And so, and I've always just been, this is my rule of thumb, by the way, this is the best advice I can give anyone is just be as nice as possible to everyone. I have this rule with myself now, which is, and I've had it for a long time now, which is, you know, it's our job as people to hear other people out and just make them feel loved and make them feel happy about themselves and so forth. Even when you're giving tough advice, you can still make them feel great about themselves and just be extremely helpful. If someone's starting something new,
right,
root for them, be their first customer, like tell everyone in the world about it. And people notice that and remember that. And so many folks just don't do that. And so
that's
that
so
was
true.
My first thing that I did. And that's why I was able to get the Rachel Zoes and the folks. I never asked for anything. I just always was helpful and nice. And I just always rooted for all of these folks. Same way I'm rooting for you guys. You guys are going to build incredible companies. You're already doing it. So the first thing I would do if I were starting out is, and this is what I did as well. So minus the, I sold a company before, I first and foremost went and looked at, you know, for a problem to solve. I didn't come up with an idea. If you come up with an idea and say, hey, I have this incredible idea, everyone else wants it, you're most likely you're not going to succeed unless you're super lucky for some reason. But for the most part, go find a problem that an audience has. And ideally that audience is somewhat similar to yourself because you're going to be able to figure out whether that's a problem or not faster. Then go talk to that audience about their problem. Don't go talk to them about your idea. Go ask them about the problem and the flow they have related to that problem, the steps they have to take. And then see if they're excited, you know, see if they're excited or if they're like angry or irked about the problem, because that's how you can tell if you've got something or not. And then start working on a prototype of some sort. And I think this is the part where people have a huge misconception. They think prototype means you got to go build a tech product.
Yeah.
Really, what you want to do is you just want to be able to prototype some cobble together something together where you can just test the market and see if there's some traction and demand. So, for example, I have a subscriber right now who he's building something for basically service providers, specifically like house cleaners, and also you know, roof cleaners. And so first thing I told him was like, focus on one of them. So we focused on roof cleaners. And so then I said to him, you know, what you should do is you should just go talk to like 10 roof cleaners, partner up with them and just say, hey, I'm going to help you for free. And I want to learn what challenges you have in your business. So you can understand amongst all of them, what are their biggest challenges and commonalities? And then go basically start solving that in a very manual way. Without any tech or using, you know, tech solutions that are already out there. And so that's what he's doing right now. And if you can just go show, hey, I've cobbled together this prototype, using other solutions out there. And I now have 10 customers and it started off as free and now they're willing to pay me and they are paying me. You can actually have a much stronger chance at fundraising. It's showing investors that you can actually do it versus talk about it. So then, you know, then your challenge becomes, how do you get access to these investors? Where are they hanging out? So that's the question I always ask folks, like, where are these folks hanging out and how can you go and be around them and start networking? So one way is to go to events, but that can be costly and timely. Another way is to just go live in Silicon Valley for a little bit. Sometimes you can cold
highly
email
recommended.
Folks.
Yes.
Yeah, Silicon Valley. Yeah. I don't disagree. If you can do it, if you can make it happen, it really does help. And start just, you know, networking and asking people for their advice. Don't go pitch them. Say, hey, I'm doing this thing. You know, I don't know if it's venture backable yet or not, but I would love to learn what it would take to be venture backable. And and what it would take to build something of scale and what you're looking for as an investor. And if someone advises you and helps you out once or twice, and by the way, don't just hit them up once. People are always scared to do this, I've learned. Even our own intro customers, we ask these folks, you know, why we ask some of the folks who didn't book more than one session, we ask them why. And surprisingly, a lot of them said, oh, I didn't know it was appropriate to book that expert more than once. I thought I didn't want to be annoying to them. And we're like, no, you can. So if you're doing this manually and you're just doing this the organic way, start asking them for more advice, stay in touch with them, make them bond with you and have a connection. And then one person could be your entryway into a lot of other, into connections with a lot of other investors, and then start repeating that process. And it takes time. And ultimately, as you're progressing and as you're doing things manually, you can start telling these investors, hey, I'm now up to like 30 or 40 clients, and I'm going to go hire a technical co-founder, and we're going to really build this out. Would you be interested in, you know, funding this as a pre-seed or a seed? I don't even know what the terms are anymore, but let's say a pre-seed. And now, as a result, you're going to be able to get a lot more momentum going with those investors. The second part, the next part is once you get that going, you unfortunately, like, it's an unfortunate truth, you have to build competition. As smart as investors are, as smart as everyone is, we're still human beings and we're emotional and we're competitive. So if I hear or if anyone,
FOMO.
Yes. Unfortunately, you have to do this. And it's also a good thing for you too, because it'll create some competition to get you the fair market price for this, for what you're building. So next, you have to basically talk to enough investors and basically set an amount that you want to raise, and then go share this with these investors and ultimately get some momentum with some commitments, and then share that with the other investors. And ultimately what ends up happening is people are more emotional about it and will say yes versus taking their time. Because the biggest thing I also don't see entrepreneurs doing is they think about me, my startup, and they don't put themselves into the shoes of other investors and have empathy for them. These investors are not just looking at your deal. They are getting a lot of deals sent their way. And they're comparing your deal to their other deals. And so the deals that are the most urgent and have the highest opportunity for them is where their focus is going to be. So if you create no urgency, then it just kind of gets lost in the shuffle. And a lot of times entrepreneurs think, oh, it's me, they don't like me or whatever. And most often not. You just didn't create any urgency, and you got to play that game. And then that's the best way I would say to raise like a pre-seed type round is actually go build something, like not a full-on product, but a working prototype. Cobble together existing solutions, go talk to your customers and religiously talk to your customers, so that you can be exceptionally articulate when you go and talk to these investors about, this is the problem that they have. I've been spending this much time with them. I know exactly what they need, and this is how we're doing it. And it's providing an immense value and ROI to these customers. And then that just makes it a lot easier to kind of fund you. Because now at that level, you know, any investor can quickly see that, man, this person, you know, she has it or he has it. And I can tell they're hungry about this and they're doing this the right way. That's the best advice I can give. It takes the work and the investment and time. So don't go create a product and start talking to investors like, you know, after you built it, et cetera. Go start building those relationships sooner.
Question: how did you get A16Z77? How did you do that?
Yeah. So the first thing I did was I built a product and I hired an exceptional team. I could afford to do so. So I funded it myself. Then what we did was we basically had a product. It wasn't glamorous, but it was still a pretty good product. And we were able to recruit 20 pretty well-known experts, whether they were more celebrities or like famous, like your proper famous, or they were creators who had a large audience. And then, so that showed folks that I could build a product and that we can also recruit exceptional, talent on the supply side. Then we had actual revenue and traction. So, and like the first, 3 months of it, I think we had like 30 to 50K in revenue, which is not a crazy amount, but it's a lot for a company that size. And it just shows that people were using it. And then we also showed that folks were coming back and reusing it quickly. And that was cool right. too. So then what I did was I asked our first expert, Rachel, if she wanted to invest, and she said yes. So that was a good vote of confidence. Then I reached out to my network of friends and CEOs and folks who were in my orbit, and I asked them for advice. And my intention was actually not to fundraise at this point. So my actual intention was to ask them for advice because I didn't know what the markets were. I hadn't raised in a long time, because I was working on the company and then sold it and I was at Intuit. And then I took some time off. So I just wanted to get their take. And I said, hey, this is our traction. Here's our vision for this. Do you think I can go raise money at some point from top funds? And not only did they say we could, they all were like, I'd like to put some money in this if it's possible. So then I said, all right, well, maybe I'll raise like 500K or something like from angels. And so quickly, like it just kept getting filled up because I would do the same thing. I would ask for their advice. And after the sixth or seventh person said, hey, can I invest in this? I reached out to all of them and said, maybe we'll do like 500K or something. And then I started doing the same thing with more friends who are investors or CEOs. And same thing kept happening is like, wow, like this, you're way farther than most people. You don't even realize how far you are compared to them. People are raising on napkins right now. So, and so we're playing on a napkin. So I kept doing that. And then next thing you know, it grew to 750 to a million. And then we're going to cap it at 1.5 million. And then we had $4 million in demand for it, just from angel investors. And then I basically raised 1.5 from those angels. And then very shortly after that, I started to raise like a proper round. And so I started talking to funds and I asked all those folks to connect me. And I also had relationships with a lot of VCs. And next thing you know, every VC I talked to, like same thing was kind of happening, which was, whoa, like you did QuickBooks, you sold to them. You obviously have built something. It's cool that you backed this yourself so far. And it's like, it's hard to get these kinds of folks going and like, we'd like to invest. And so pretty much, I shouldn't say every investor, but a lot of them said yes. So that created momentum. And then I got introduced to Alexis and also the 776 fund and Caitlin at 776. Yeah. And then I got introduced to Andreessen. And Andreessen was very fast. Like they called me 2 minutes after my pitch and said, we're doing this deal with you. We're going to talk in a couple hours about terms. And then I guess afterwards, after we signed it, they said Jeff Jordan was like turned around to us and said, like, make sure this happens. Like, this is going to be a great company. And so I was shocked to hear that. And I was like, whoa, like that guy, that was pretty cool. That was a pretty cool moment of my life, to be honest, to hear something like that from that person. So, and Andrew Chen, and he's been amazing and he really wants to do a deal and he made it happen. So
we have about like 8 minutes left here. I don't know if you want to do like a fun round. I'd love to hear, like you're obviously involved on the supply side of your marketplace, getting like a lot of like really interesting and probably famous people. Do you have any like, and also you're in LA, you're in the scene, like give us some like stories that you've never told before, and you don't need
or like really fun people to book on intro that like we wouldn't think of that we should.
No, the stories are better, Sarah. Come on. Well, what are the crazy stories?
Have to pay for those.
He's a hustler. He's going and trying to sign up all the supply people himself. I know exactly what he's doing. What are some like fun stories that you could share? You don't need to name names, but it'd be better if you did.
Yeah. Funny enough, we actually do zero recruiting now of the supply side. It's all inbound and word of mouth.
That's boring. But like, what did you do early days? Or any fun stories? Because like for me, like I've been in like the Silicon Valley bubble. Like I've had like dinners with like Leonardo DiCaprio and like just like crazy like in just insane things. I went to like Rihanna's like ball and all this stuff. You get pulled in the orbit. I feel like you definitely have gotten there. Like, give us some like just like juicy things for our audience to laugh to about share. Or to share.
To be honest, I'm in LA, but I'm still a nerd, and I don't go out a lot. Who would be interesting? I became friends with Keegan Michael Key, and that was pretty cool. And
that's cool.
You know, from Key and Peele, and
yeah, that's and awesome. So I love them.
We started hanging out more, and that was pretty fun. I text with, he's a lot busier now, so I text with him more than hang out. And same with me, I'm a little bit too busy these days. I've definitely partied with Leo DiCaprio a couple times.
Hell yeah.
He only parties with young girls. I'm surprised he's funny.
Oh, come on, Sarah. Don't throw her under the bus like that.
Teenage girl. What about like a weird, like crazy use case for intro that is taking off? Like people booking.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
You might not think of that you could book. Like, I didn't realize I could book a stylist. Like, I need to go do that because I definitely need some styling help.
Yeah. So
you can maybe tell.
This is, I just found out about this from Michael Sugar, he's an expert on intro. And I don't want to promise this. I don't want people to hear this and be like, this is going to happen for you, but this is really cool to hear. So I guess someone booked Michael Sugar is an incredible producer in Los Angeles. He does a lot of shows with Netflix. He was a producer of 13 Reasons Why and a number of other shows. He was a producer of the movie Spotlight with Michael Keaton. And this guy's legit. So he's an expert. He's like loved the whole concept of mission as well for a long time. I just talked to him like a few days ago, and he told me, he's like, you're not going to believe what's happening. And I'm like, tell me more. And he's like, this guy booked me, and he's like this contractor out of the Midwest. He looks the part. He's got this like great energy to him. He's a little funky. Yeah. And he asked me about how to create a show, and he wanted to understand the mechanics of it and so forth. And so I worked with him a couple times, and I did. And then I just personally saw something in him. So I started connecting him to my folks in my world. And
that's cool.
It looks like,
that's really cool.
It looks like say which network, but it looks like he's going to get a show. And he's like, you got to go get this guy to be your spokesperson, 'cause he's going to owe you big time as a result. And so that's pretty cool to see that happen. And that was, I never in my mind would have thought something like that could happen on our product.
That's awesome.
So it's pretty cool to see interesting, amazing things happen. Another cool one, really quick. I love this story. I can't say who she is, but I had someone who booked me and a number of experts on intro. She has this amazing business. Can't say what the business is because she asked me not to. But you know, she was doing $1.4 million in revenue, and you know, she had gotten it to that point, and she just felt like everything she did after that point just would not move the needle. Like, she was kind of stuck.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, she started tearing up a little bit and said like, I think I'm just going to cut this off or try to sell it for like a little bit of money and then go back to my job. It was pretty high paying before. And I said, no way. Like, you have the right bones. You just now need to figure out how to turn the right levers. And I think it's not that much more complicated. So she booked me and I think like five other experts on the platform. And then I got an update from her. And so in 18 months, she went from 1.4 million to she's now on a $16 or $17 million run rate.
Oh, yeah. That's like, awesome.
You're the cool expert, so I can 16X my...
Put that on your homepage. Put that on your homepage. Well, why don't we end that this episode? Rhett, it's been awesome to have you. Also, this episode is sponsored by me and Sarah's intro
pages. Yeah, we'll put our intro link in the show notes.
intro.co/KevinGibbon. What's yours, Sarah?
Be it Sarah Moskov.
Okay. Well, we're going to put them in the show notes. You can book us, and also Rad, I'm sure that you have I'm sure it's intro.co/Rad
Milgram. Yeah, Rad Milgram. Yeah, please. Okay. Yeah, book all of us. Yes.
Yeah.
But definitely book Kevin and Sarah.
Yeah. Yes. Thanks so much.
Rad doesn't need the bookings. We do.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks so much, Rad, for coming on. I think this has been a really great episode, and everybody, we will see you later.